was sitting in the Hong Kong committee room since 8:30. Let me apologize. I was wondering that past 8:30, no one from this committee, and I was asking somebody, my apology committee members. And this researcher was just laughing at my right hand side. He joined me in that committee room, and he sat there with me also, but now he's laughing at me. He was with me, not knowing that it's not 123. I've heard that they are still waiting for an adapter. I don't know to do what, but can I say I'm declaring this meeting open? And I'm suspecting that we must start with our minutes while they are still waiting for extension cords. Hoping that we have a good weekend. I'm taking this opportunity that the agenda is in front of us. Consideration of minutes, briefing by South African people. I want agenda, not the minutes. Yeah, consideration of minutes, briefing by Chief Director in Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. Potential use of monitoring and evaluation information for oversight deliberation. Anyone who want to add something in the agenda before we adopt it? Can I say that I'm presenting the agenda in front of you, and then I want somebody to honorable person.
Thanks, Chair. Just with regards to the weekend, the strategic, is it worth maybe just getting on some type of program or if it's going ahead or not?
Sorry, I don't see it in this agenda. Maybe it must be put as number one, and then the consideration of minutes to be number two. Maybe that's why she put announcements. We need to write it down in order that you must not assume what announcements. Any other thing or anyone who wish to adopt the agenda? Honorable Manan.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'd like to adopt the agenda as a
as amended, because number one is announcement, but we are calling them not announcement. One is, what do we call it, is report back on strategic workshop. Thank you, Honorable Manan. Honorable Rihoma is seconded. Okay. The agenda is in front of us. Can you give us? Okay. May we get the report on the strategic workshop? Who has got that?
Thank you, ma'am. At the moment, we have a very positive indication that the in principle it will be approved. However, there are members who have reported or indicated that they will not be able to attend. I think it's especially because of the Saturday portion, who have commitments, party commitments, and constituency commitments. I think they will also indicate to you whether they can come or not. They are permanent members, so who cannot come? Mr. Manati and Mr. Mateka and Mr. Musi are unable to attend. So I think what's before the committee is days proved to be impossible, but that obviously is after the committee waits. So I think what's before the committee is would they like to go ahead with it this weekend if it's approved, or otherwise would they like to postpone it?
Thank you, Shen. Just to add to what Sunny has just proposed, is that the National Assembly and particularly National Assembly is currently underway of drafting the 5 years which is there for Parliament. The possible days that we've been given for completion is the 10th of October. But as it is draft document, consultations are taking place already. It is expected that by the 10th of October it will be tabled. So I think as perhaps the way forward, Chair, just so we don't get ahead of ourselves as well, perhaps to wait for the plan that will give us directives and to give us a strategic direction to unfold, and therefore take it from there and see how then will the committee plan moving forward. So our proposal then being, should the committee consider it, that we plan towards after the date of the 10th, anytime, of course October is much more busy than ACCC, so perhaps the first week of November or somewhere around November will be the most suitable date for the strengthening of the committee, should the committee so decide.
Yeah, Chair. Well, we'll go with what is possible. But I observed that some committees were holding their strategy workshops during the course. Necessarily, they were not going out. They would go and come back. So maybe that was the option. But given that we now have this possibility, and if it doesn't affect us, I think, because at the moment we do have a 3 months program. So maybe let's wait for the breakaway. Because it will inform us. Thank you, Shepherd.
On the other hand, let me take this opportunity to say that we are very few not to be all in the strategy meeting. But also, as I'm sitting here, I'm not even sure whether we'll be getting an approval. As well, hearing the PA saying that it's positively. So if Friday I did get to my phone a letter that I must sign, I'm not yet signed the invitation. That's one other problem I was wondering. If I'm signing this request today, I was thinking that it was already with the chairperson of this house chairperson, so, and it has been not clear whether we are going or not, and even some of us were not yet planned accordingly. Because if we are not yet granted the permission, we are just not knowing what to do. So if other members, they don't feel what we are feeling, but the advice from the content advisor, I'm suspecting that this is a possible one. But the letter of the application must be written in time in order that we must confirm or not confirm. I was worried when I was seeing the letter that it was sent to my email once I was away. not yet even sign the acquisition of whatever. But let me hear from honorable members what is the view of the majority. Because about three members already have apologized, talking about the constituency days of Saturday. I do take that very serious, because we need to also apply through the weeks of parties if they can release the members on Saturday. It's not just a given thing. So may I have an indication of members, how do they feel about this report?
Chair, given the advice of the content advisor, and I think, I mean, it's for the committee to decide, but for me, is there any particular rush to wrap this up now? And if there is, I mean, can it be shared by the rush, and whereas we can just do things as they are done according to the book and also understand? Maybe we also need to deliberate what should be going into the strategy workshop so that then we can learn from it. Because it is one thing to have a weekend away in the strategy workshop, but what do we want to achieve of that, out of that? What should be going into it so that even when we plan, we can bear that into mind?
As I'm sitting here, I know even that tomorrow all chairperson have been called by house chairperson. Maybe they were going to table what you are saying that I was not aware. So let's give the management to sit and look at the dates. Maybe after tomorrow's meeting that I will be hearing what the house chairperson is saying on the documents, and then we'll come back to the committee to reflect what is expected of us and what is it that we want to achieve in the strategy. I'm taking that. The matter is closed. Thank you so much. We are referring to the management committee, and then in the next meeting, we must come and support fully to the committee what is expected of us. Thank you, honorable members. Honorable members, number two, consideration of minutes. Let's go to page one. Any corrections? Any input? Let's do correction and input if they are. Page two. Page three.
I think on page 3, where in this paragraph where we speak of the member who spoke to the media, we did make an input that if the member was speaking on his behalf or on the behalf of his party, it's okay. But if he went there and speak on behalf of the committee, without the mandate, then it's problematic. I think that input is not captured in there.
Or the resolution, because if it's merely resolution, then
Honorable Muteka did raise something that is omitted in the minutes. And then, can we allow that we must comment and discuss matters arising? This is your script. Let's pass to this point three. Let's go to page four.
Thank you.
order that we must have a report back about this evening, tomorrow, if we do go there. There was a proposal which was not communicated with the members that how about Wednesday to confirm that invitation that they invited us for the lunch. So we're thinking that we are going to also check in this report that they came as report to us, how far are they within the group case. So let me ask the members whether we can confirm this day of tomorrow.
My other members, if they are available, but I only have available because they will be in the first place.
Know that we cannot force, so I don't think that we have ever done that. Even the questionnaire, a visit to Inet Board, immediately that was seen that so many members are not having time to go, we didn't go there. So I must give you assurance that in whatever we're doing, we want the majority of our members to own. So I do hear that we're not yet ready to get this information. We're not yet ready to go in there. Already two members are apologizing. And then let me hear from other members. Honorable Manali.
I think we cannot keep on postponing some of our programs. I think it will depend how many members are available or how many members who are not available. Because if it's only two members who are not available, we cannot reschedule dates for the program that we have decided, maybe we've already decided to take it on.
Honorable
Moose,
thank you. Honorable Manana.
Yeah, thank you. I think I'm going to share the same sentiment with Honorable Manana, that perhaps the chairperson should check as to how many would be available and check as to whether we cannot go also over that for those that would not be going would have given an apology.
I must correct something that we are not going there because of Louvo case. We have been invited formally by estate when they did come to brief us. So I must I try to check whether members, they are thinking that we are going there because of Uluvo. It's going to be an opportunity, because this invitation is a long invitation. It has got a month ago. But the problem is that we've been busy as a committee. So I'm trying to give an opportunity to members to reflect, because on tomorrow it's Wednesday, and our plenary is about 3 o'clock, and we party, I don't know what time is it. Like I was going to plead to a member that the time 9:30 to 11 to 12 is enough for we can ask them. Lunch is something that is prepared. We are not going there for food. They wanted to put a name lunch because they wanted us to discuss and to check what are they doing. And I'm motivating members that sometimes if we are postponing invitations, other institutions, they won't take us serious. Whilst even ourselves, we've been harsh saying that why Boxing South Africa is always not taking our invitation. We must be consistent when we're doing things. I'm not forcing, but let's check how many members that we can excuse them, and with due respect that we are all adults, but we have a role to play in this committee. I've seen Mr. Mutega's hand.
Thank you. I think let us understand each other. We know we all here to work, and if there is a program that was committed to, cannot be postponed because one person or two persons are not going to be there. It's not like we are saying tomorrow's program is not serious. It's just there are some other parliamentary work that we have to do as we are here today. So let us take it in that light.
Honourable members, those who can go, they must communicate with Sunay. I'm having a commitment tomorrow at 2, and I can go. And then any other member who's going to go, they must forward their names to Sunay in order that, as from now onwards, the arrangement even with faith, because they've been asking why are we not confirming. They invited us a month ago. Thank you, honourable members.
Yeah, it's my name, our fellow chairperson, but at the same time, because that Sunay sent us, you know, the full, whatever, that the preparation of the whole thing, where at the time, everything.
Yeah, except that I'm proposing 9:30 as our committee time, in order that if we are leaving at 9:30 by 10, 11, maybe 11:30, we must come back. So Usunay and the rest, they must tell those people that we cannot come at 12, we cannot come at 1, because we are at work. So if they can now be flexible, that they must accommodate us in our available time. Thank you. Honourable.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Apology for being late. I went to the wrong committee room. I belong to two committees, and therefore, if it's the next day, then I wouldn't be able to attend because I've got my study groups which affect me. So my apology for not being available. Thank you.
Study group sitting in the morning.
Yes, my other committee is in the morning, and then after that, then there's a study group. Thank you.
Apologies now must not come to me. I've given a ruling that those who can, they must forward it to Sunay, and those who are not, also to Sunay, in order that we must move on with our meeting. thank you, honorable members. We're still on page 2 and page 3. We're talking about matters arising. Let's try to be faster. We can't take an hour to deliberate on the minutes and matters arising. Let's try to improve. Page 3. I'm suspecting that is.
No, page 3. What is? I was just asking a question whether we don't have a problem because a member can comment as an individual or for the party whether we are happy that they must even preempt comment on issues that we'll be discussing before because the members shall have had the agenda of those particular meetings, whether we are of the view that there is no problem with that. From where I'm sitting, I mean, it might be a problem that members even comment on issues that are going to be discussed immediately after. I think the chair must assist us because my view here is that it will be a problem if we are going to behave like that. My take is that we need to discuss issues or just comment. If you comment on issues that are not in the agenda, we won't interfere with a member or a member representing a party. But if you comment after representing your party on a different view, it might be a different thing altogether. But to prevent discussion, from where I'm sitting, it might be a problem for the chairperson in particular.
Honorable,
thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'd like to second the whip on that. We are not spokespersons for the committee. I think the chairperson will do that. But if a member wants to speak on behalf of their party, then it's fine, but not on behalf of the committee. Thank you.
So I think, to me, the matter has been closed, and we dealt with it correctly. I don't think we have to waste more time on it.
Honorable Malak.
Like you said, but as I understand it, this debate is based on an issue that the previous committee meeting dealt with, and it was very clear from the chairperson's final remarks, which are in this minute, that members of the committee have their rights to make comments in their respective capacities as representatives of their parties on this. And even on that issue, if we were to go back to it, there was nowhere, either on record, in writing, or in evidence, where there was a claim that somebody was speaking on behalf of the committee. I just think we're running around in circles on semantics rather than dealing with the issue here. The issue the person made a ruling, and it was dealt as such. So we can't be held back by the ruling that was made a week ago.
Honorable members, if you go to the last paragraph before the last item in page 3, I've reflected. Let's emphasize that party members, they do have their own right to speak as party members. And then the committee statement is done by chairperson. But also, I want, out of a record of what I've said, I want to caution that even the party members, it's wise to wait and or else to want this thing to be processed. I'm suspecting that thing of CIA, we have said we're going to call Ustaf, but because Honorable Malaza was not spoke on behalf of the committee, it was on behalf of his party. So let's just stick to that. Thank you. The matter is closed.
and good morning, honorable members, once again. I did go look at the brief. One thing I must just say in advance is that it was prepared just the following day after that. It was meant to be circulated, but the secretary still had to look at procedural matters and to what the issues there. But the matter, the brief was there. It will be circulated immediately after this meeting because it's readily available. The chairperson has got it in her office. But what is the principle there that one could raise is that it's a matter of the agreements between the country itself and the federation through its body association, SAFA. And so there are a number of agreements that SAFA and the government of South Africa would have been would have signed as part of an agreement. And those issues are mentioned in the SAFA protocols and issues. But of principle, and just as a matter of reflective, is that all processes that have to do, one, with the National Sports and Recreation Act 2007, the amended Act of 2007, all my processes that have to do with that, as to what are the interventions that, one, the minister can have, two, the regulatory body in the country, which is SAFCOC, can do to assist matters like this. All those processes have been explored, and they have been dealt with by the respective parties. And in as far as the minister could intervene and could act, that he has done to a point that they even have to consult with FIFA at some point, with FIFA, sorry, at some point to address this particular matter. And following that matter, requested and written a letter, which is the final thing that the minister can do, write a letter to the president to request that there be a commission to be set up. Now, once the president had applied his mind and consulted with the respective stakeholders, he then earlier this year issued a statement to say that matter has been put on hold pending FIFA's own parallel own investigation, because FIFA had then indicated that there's a worldwide investigation that is going around within 72 countries that have been affected by match fixing. So the president then took a stance in agreement to that, to say FIFA will then proceed with the investigation. Now, pending the final report on that, then a statement or further processes will unfold. But still, they will come to SAFA, and SAFA will still have to follow the same process of taking the matter to SAFCOC, for SAFCOC to see if there's any need for intervention, because that's what the National Sports and Recreation Act stipulates, notwithstanding the statutes of FIFA as to what are the regulations that govern the government intervene and deal with matters relating to the appropriation. So, bottom line was that as Parliament with the mandate of oversight, what then can be done? Considering that this is not a body that falls within the borders of the country. This has to do with the international bodies. One option that provides the mandate of the committee is that the committee can write in terms of the NA rules, could write to the speaker to request permission to call FIFA to brief it on this matter. Secondly, could request, as the SAFA president has indicated, could request through SAFA that FIFA should be called to come and brief. Thirdly, to follow the directive that the minister, the president have taken, or follow that decision and wait upon a final report of FIFA. Those are the matters that have been explored. Perhaps there are other legal matters that committee, Parliament itself can explore. I have not been able to explore such. But in terms of the legal processes and the statutes that govern the regulation of sports in South Africa. Those are the possibilities that the committee can exercise, and pending that, then the matter can be taken forward. Thank you.
Honourable members, I'm suspecting that it doesn't mean that we must fold our arms. Let's take decision on the three suggestions that are put, because as this committee, we want to hear from last year what FIFA, either SAFA or FIFA or the ministry, but they are saying that President said that FIFA must, SASCOC and FIFA must finalize this thing. But as this committee, we have an interest. So, out of interest, let's take among these three suggestions, because we'd love that FIFA must come and brief the committee. I'm sure it was the last parliament that they did come, and I couldn't want to ask how did they come and brief the committee. But now there are three suggestions. Let's check which one that is suitable for us to call them to brief us. The matter is that they must come and brief us, but the matter is that how can we out of these advices.
Thank you. As I understood the conscience advisor's background of the issue, is that there are two things. One is that the issue of the intervention is unrelated to this, because our case is that we need to know what the status of that intervention is. So that process that ultimately led in the president's decision not to appoint the FIFA Commission of Inquiry, that is aside from what we want to do. Our interest is in why has there been inaction or any lack of update regarding the match fixing as it is. And I don't think there's anything in the legislation that, one, stops the portfolio committee from extending to FIFA an invitation to update us. It is then up to FIFA to decide whether updating us while that investigation is undergoing or has stalled is in their best interest or not. But I don't think we'll be doing ourselves a justice if we were to preempt what their reaction is. I think we've got every right to say that, you know, to go with option three, I think it was option two, that we'll do a letter and it will be complemented by a letter from SAFA as the president offered in that meeting that we can do a supporting say our parliament has asked that you appear before the portfolio committee to do this briefing per se. And then from there we have done our part, and our next step or lack of would be informed by what the response is from FIFA.
No, Chair, I think let's have the understanding from the minister. Let's pose this question to the minister. We have not had that opportunity, because the minister has had an opportunity to interact with FIFA, because my take really is that while we are a committee of parliament, sometimes it makes sense to interact with the minister if there are certain things that we are not hearing about, and therefore the minister has had the opportunity to get interact with the bodies that be. Because on this case in particular, the minister has had to interact with the bodies that be directly on the matter of mesh fixing. I agree that we are a committee of parliament, we can do as we wish, but this time I think let's just have that opportunity to engage with the minister. Once we are not satisfied with the explanations from the minister, then even the minister will understand that we didn't just disregard the presence of the minister when direct to any international board. Because so far, I don't remember ourselves in
follow what the minister has done to try to resolve this matter. We all know. He did his best. And all what we are doing now is to support him. We don't bypass him, but whatever we do, we let him know that we are in his support for this matter to be resolved. So I don't see any problem.
Chair, I think the key thing with this issue is that we are not bypassing any executive process that has taken place. We know that was concluded. That executive process was concluded by the president's decision not to appoint a judicial commission of inquiry, awaiting the outcome of FIFA's investigation, if it is going ahead. So what the committee rightly identified in last week's meeting, based on what Safa also said, is their frustration over this stalling about the match fixing. And I don't think there is anything out of the ordinary in us, once we've made that decision, informing our minister, saying that as the portfolio committee, this is what we have resolved, and we are sending this letter to you, and FYI, this is what we are doing. I don't think that our decision should be dependent on a favorable outcome from the minister's views. His views on the matter were to approach the president, as the content advisor indicated. That was what the legislation empowered the minister to do, that any consideration about the appointment of judicial commissions of inquiry are vested in the president's powers. So what he could do is to write a letter to the president. And that intervention has been done. FIFA took the decision to do an investigation. Our interest in support of Safa's frustration is, since the announcement of the investigation, since March, as they said, in the last interaction that FIFA had with Safa, there hasn't been anything coming forth regarding, one, the status of the commission, and two, if it is actually progressing or otherwise. And I think that's where our action should be focused on.
There's something that is circulating around this table. There's somebody saying that international law to look on it. I'll give you the last intake, and even myself, I will be responding what I wanted to say to the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Just to understanding all what members are saying, I think I'll take from the premise of the minister when he said that, you know, it is in the best interest of the country to unearth any unethical behavior that is taking place in the country, including corruption, maladministration, and all those things that are affecting sports negatively. This being one of them. But secondly, it cannot go free of charge. But also, you know, there are, in all federations, there's limitations of the powers that the minister has in as far as charging individuals within bodies of federations are concerned, including agreements that govern those bodies. Now, what has happened post the letter that the president has written, which was earlier this year, it was in March, is that FIFA had responded to say that obviously it was towards preparation of the 2014 World Cup in Brazil. One would assume that while the investigation is ongoing and new things are coming as well on the table of FIFA. You recall the scandals that came, particularly around match fixing now in the 2014 World Cup. All those things have been included in as part of the wider part. And I think the president of FIFA indicated last week that they do not know in which country now have they concluded this investigation. And so I'm assuming that FIFA is still
the process is still ongoing. However, from the committee's mandate and what the country can do is precisely to what extent can the powers of the committee allow it to call an international body to account for it. That's something that I think through the international law and agreements that have been signed, one could go and explore as to what those powers can extend. However, and there's nothing wrong really to write to FIFA and request. The question is, when are they going to agree to come? It is not our concern, as it is perhaps, as the member rightly points out, that it shouldn't be our concern as whether they would come now or tomorrow or next year. But that expectation it is perhaps given within the law. However, I've also said to my members and proposed that such things that have to do with other bodies that do not fall within the jurisdiction of the country and parliament should be taken through the Speaker of Parliament, and therefore the processes that is taken at such level. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, I'm part of you. I'm not a judge. I'm just contributing. I'm suspecting that this committee will never ever meet a minister. We are quoting that minister said and said, but as this committee, we deserve to have a minister to explain some of things that are on papers, in official papers. This caution of international instruments of agreements and that letter that we must write to a speaker. My feeling is that we can't write to a speaker without calling our minister. A minister must come and account to us, and we must tell the minister that we are not happy. We have called to suffer. We don't ask permission, but as this committee, we are a new committee that we are not yet meeting our own minister. So if you don't mind, let's ask a minister and take him through that we've been briefed and we've been not happy about this match fixing, and then we've called USAFA, and USAFA has said, hey, we know some of us, I even wanted those letters that they were between the USAFA, the minister, the president. I do have, but there's nothing new on those letters. It's what we've been told, that minister wanted that a commission must be commissioned, but the president said no, it must go back to FIFA. As we're sitting here, we're not ashamed to say that we've been told officially in this committee that there are those who have already been arrested to this, but we want the entire report. Entire report is with USASCOC to FIFA. With your respect, can we call the minister in order that we must tell him that we are not happy that as Fifth Parliament, this thing is not yet finalized, and it's a scandal that it's within this committee. We can't just fold arms as this committee not wanted this thing to be finalized. And correctly so, we're not asking permission, but because of somebody who, as a minister in this sport and recreation, that's my intake. Honorable Bergman.
Thanks, Chair. I agree with everything you say in terms of the involvement is far broader than just the minister. You know, you've got the president and you've got FIFA. So where the minister has called for the commission and the president contradicted the minister and said, let's leave it in FIFA's hands. If I was an ANC minister at this stage, I would then say that we can't do anything because we need FIFA to respond, not SAFA to respond. So now does this committee.
It's the Minister of Sport, not the Minister of AIDS.
Sorry, I meant the sorry, the Minister of. But if I'm saying that we need to call FIFA, does this body have the powers? Because Softis is going to say that FIFA's investigating. Tesco's going to say FIFA's investigating. The minister's going to say FIFA's investigating. So how do we get FIFA then to respond to us? And maybe that's where we should take a bold step as this committee and actually try and summon someone from FIFA to come and tell us what is happening so that we can get a full oversight as to what is really happening in South African football.
I'm not a
promoter.
Thanks, Chair. I think somehow we can say it's unfortunate. We are already in the second term, but we haven't met our minister. We only see him on plenary. I think I know about Glasgow commitments and all that, but really, other committees have met their ministers and all that. Mine, I only see in the plenary. So I think, and we have to, these things, we have to talk with him. He will also advise on what to do, where he didn't get it right, and all that things. So we cannot leave him aside dealing with this matter. So we need him as soon as possible. He must be, in fact, we don't have to call him when we have crisis only. Sometimes he must just come, and then we deal with issues with him, really. I feel like a neglected child. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm
saying with you, actually agree, all of us, that we need to do something about this. We only give up on technicality. That let us not sort of jump the gun and bypass certain people. You are having someone who is an overseer for sports who directly met with the FIFA, and you need an information, you want to summon FIFA, and then you bypass that person. I am saying, as much as we all agree, let us start with the minister first. Let the minister come here. Summoning the minister is not as difficult as summoning FIFA. We can call our minister, so we can pick up the phone today and say, Minister, we want to see you. Come and brief us about this. I think the minister will come. I therefore would align myself with the idea that let the minister come here and let's take it from there. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I agree with Mr. Moose's first part of the call, that the understanding, and I because this is a very difficult issue, and I think we always need to bear in mind what happened prior to us, and we must be cognizant of all those developments. But the key thing for me is that the committee's action has taken last week, and as again expressed in this forum, that the ultimate goal of the committee is to summon FIFA to brief the committee on the progress or lack of. So we can have a free action plan. We can, one, as easily and readily available, call the minister for the minister to give us an update on his interaction with FIFA. Some of which is public, in the sense that, you know, it was in that letter to the president for the commission of inquiry, and as Feather alluded to, the meeting that the minister had with the secretary general of FIFA in Switzerland. But I think in all these other auxiliary steps that the committee would be taking, we shouldn't lose the essence that the fundamental goal is to support FIFA, and therefore that has to be clear, that even in the interaction with minister, it is to inform our course of action to someone FIFA, not to be a determinant as to whether we can proceed or otherwise, because there is not clearly defined legal obstacle that says we cannot someone FIFA.
not on my left. No. Because I'm seeing now so many hands. I want to rule, land correctly, or whatever you want to say. I'll be ruling on this discussion with due respect. Let's leave him to land, honourable members. I've heard your point of orders. It must not be in the National Assembly.
The point of what I said is that Honorable Malati is saying we want the minister to come here because the minister is going to determine whether we should call fever or not, and it is wrong. We are not saying that.
No, he didn't say that. He said that we want to call minister, and we have a right, but we must bear in mind that we don't call minister, a sort of to ask permission. But I was going to say to himself, he also must listen what we are saying as committee members. No one did say that we must call a minister for any other reason. So that's why I'm saying I want to give him to wrap up, but there's another point of interjection.
No, you see, the impression that Honorable Malachi is giving is that there is no person who is responsible for sports in this country.
I'm not. Point of order, sir.
Honorable member, give me to chair this meeting. There is a point of order that Honorable Malachi. Yes. Can you finish what we are saying?
Yeah, my point is that our call to call the minister is a part of an exercise that informs our cost of action in calling the political administration. It shouldn't be
a determinant as to whether we can proceed or otherwise. And nothing in that says nobody's responsible for sport or otherwise. So I don't take kindly to that inference. I think it's unfair and it's inaccurate, actually, because it's not what I said.
Honorable members, may I take this opportunity to say we've debated this. We started from last week and we wanted an advice, and the advice is the one that we're discussing upon it. And we may differ on how we see this thing happening, but all of us, as I'm listening, we want to have a report from FIFA. But the way to get that information, we are not on the same path. But the only understanding that I'm having, let's agree that there's a minister in this department. That it is minister, we didn't ask permission to himself to call SAFA, because the report on the committee was saying SAFA is part of match fixing. And we said, SAFA, come and tell us, why are you part of this? And then SAFA told us where now the thing is lying. He said to us is with FIFA. And immediately that the committee and myself saying that let's call FIFA. Then comes the content advisor came with this information. In a way, we agree that we want the results and the finality of this as this committee. But the way to get there, we are differing. but not that much, as we are discussing. Even Honorable Malazo is saying that when we are calling a minister, it doesn't mean that we are calling minister in order that Honorable Malazo to ask a permission. We're still going to tell the minister that the minister, we are calling you because you are a minister of this department. But our aim as this committee, we called you to tell you that we want UFIFA to come and brief us. It's not asking permission, it's to tell the minister that even the committee is saying that he's supposed to be with us. We are all agreed he has been not with us. He went to Glasgow, he went to Brazil. So, but as a committee now, we want him to come and address us. So I'm closing this point by saying that this afternoon, if he's not in the plenary, I'll call him. When is our next meeting? That next week's Tuesday, the minister must come and address us on the FIFA issue. We know that he has done something, but now Tina as the committee want to put the pressure where the problem lies. The problem lies with UFIFA. And as we're sitting here, we don't know why UFIFA is not yet ready to tell us. Because we're not yet called UFIFA. And we don't want to assume that UFIFA doesn't want to tell us. But there are these cautions that we're having as a committee. We don't want to act as if there are no laws in Parliament, your international laws. But those international laws, they must not be obstacles to the committee. We are bearing in mind on that, I'm suspecting by asking the Speaker, let's not first go to the Speaker, let's first discuss with the minister, and then we'll look at the options. But the committee wants to see UFIFA. With those words, Tuesday we'll ask that the minister must come, unless otherwise. I've concluded and I've rounded up. There are about two hands that they don't want me to take a decision. And Honorable Manana, Honorable Mutek, I want not to give you. By opening this, there are comrades or members who will be maybe objecting to your input after I've summarized. Do you mind if I'm suppressing you? It will kill you. I'll dare you. Honorable Mutek.
I'm not really changing anything. The chair concluded it. Mine is advice. You know, I've observed something here, and that is a new tendency. Models for this morning. This committee used to debate and engage as sober as it is, not judging like now this one is speaking from where and all that. That thing is going to make life difficult for us here. Let us soberly debate like we did from the beginning and we carry on. But if we are going to be just like Manana is speaking, Honorable Manana is speaking, and his ANC or something like that, we're going to have problems. Thank you.
I won't allow it. As you hear me when I'm wrapping off, when we started to have this committee on the first day, I've said I cannot take 11 million put on this head because I'm an ANC chairperson. Here, we want each and every body to say something, because e-sport is one of those committee that as a sport people, we want unity, we want the transformation. We can't get a transformation if maybe we'll be thinking that when Honorable DA, Honorable EF, Honorable whoever they are contributing, they are contributing because they are coming from those political parties. And the ANC, it cannot behave other way around. I will monitor that, and I know that they do have the interest of the unity of this committee. Make no mistake. Memanan.
Thanks, Chaperson. Chaperson, I think if we put our input in this committee, we mark whatever a member is saying. So I will request Honorable Bergman just to withdraw the statement of saying ANC minister, because we are here to, this committee, we are talking about unity. And if you start mentioning Honorable Moteka, that EFF minister, that is not going to be a unity in this committee. But if you want to unite whatever we are saying, it's a recommendation or it's an input, you must just support that if it's something that we need to support. But if maybe he starts to say AMC minister, that's not a unity. He's going to cause a disunity in this committee. If he can, I will be happy if he can withdraw that statement, because he simply said sorry and he continued with his statement. But if he can just withdraw.
I don't know, Honorable members, what went wrong today? Is it Thursday fever? No, I'm still on the floor. Is it a Thursday fever? It must not come to this committee. This is one other committee that it has been consistently tolerating each other. Let's tolerate each other. Immediately that Mr. Bergman, he said, Minister of ANC, of course, him, and he said, my apology. I don't know whether there's any other thing, Honorable Members. Because I cautioned him and he said, my apology. So, Honorable Manani is saying that he continued. I didn't hear him continuing that. So, Honorable Whip, I'll come to you.
We'll ensure that all members participate in the committee. But members need to be consistent. For now, Chair, I think you have ruled and will abide by your ruling. It's just that we need to be consistent all the time, even at the level of plenary. We can't give differently somewhere depending on what we want to achieve on a particular moment. Because you must understand that in terms of committee, parliament, it is clear that there is a party that has got a majority. And if we can use that majority, even at the level of a committee, it can use that majority in all the committees and even at the level of the plenary. So I'm making that point because it is important that we should make that point.
Honorable members, I've closed this matter in the note that on Tuesday we'll ask the minister to come here, and just now I've been given a note saying that let's be consistent. Usaru Rabi is being investigated. What are we saying? We didn't discuss with due respect content advisor and research. We cannot let them go with that. He's saying that the Rabi COO is alleged involved in this. So for us not be seen as obsessed with SAFA only, it's because SAFA we've got a report. I want to be just myself, that we'll come to each and every one who's coming, who's having the funds of this government, who's doing whatever we're thinking that this committee will need information. This thing that suffer, we need to come to an end of it by calling them. Whatever way of calling them, we're going to call them and was it going to have so other things that they may be petty. I plead that let's be one committee, and we are capable of being one committee. I don't want to give you chance to talk, because you said we have apologized. Want to apologize again?
No, I was scared.
We have visitors. The visitors whom we have, this is the first time that this committee today is like this. But the problem is politicians. And the politicians, they don't just take anything on front of themselves. Can anyone who's leading, Mr. Stanley, Dagumba, Chief Director, and MNE, Police and Capacity Building Unity, Ms. Esprit, Ms. Moodley, Chief Government Performance Info Specialist, may you join us. We are very sorry. I'm suspecting that you are part of government, and you know that your government does have portfolio and select committees, and you know that we are politicians. And a politician, when they want anything to be right, they start from this point where we differ, but at the end of the day, we'll be coming with a concrete proposal in order that our people who voted us there, they must trust on us that we can differ, but at the end of the day, we'll be coming with a strong view. We apologize that we are taking your time. I was thinking that the minutes is 30 minutes, but the politician, you don't assume that they will say agree. With those words, let's give you your time, and honorable members, let's listen to this MDP. I don't want to say police. That some of us, we know what it is, but we're not knowing how our the committee related issues on NDP. Let's listen very carefully. You'll assist us, because we are hearing that we're about to go to the strength plan. I'm sure our strength plan will need that input of NDP, that when we're moving, as we're having a resolution wherever, that we must effect the NDP briefing in our strategic workshop who's coming. Platform is yours.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson of the Sports and Recreation Portfolio Committee, and greetings to Honorable Members. So thank you for allowing us as officials to come share with you the kind of work that we are doing. We have been duly delegated by our Director General, who unfortunately has to attend to other matters of in relation to supporting cabinet. I'm here as the acting Deputy Director General for one branch called Institutional Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. And with my colleague, as introduced, Ms. Idesha Modley. Idesha Modley, yes. Honorable members, we responded quickly to this invitation because we have been asked by our Honorable Minister Jeff Hadebe, to share as much information as possible to the decision makers. Starting to the ones that we support in the executive side, and also encourage us to also share as much with the honourable members of parliament whenever we are invited to do so, because he believes that information is very important, that it's there to be used rather than us as technical officials to keep it to ourselves. So it is on that note really that we are here. Coming
come to the presentation, we will scan through the areas of work that we focus on as the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. And my colleague, Jayashree, will also talk to a specific area of work which is very close to the work of Parliament, which is around the strategic planning and annual performance planning of the work of government, which is a function that has recently been transferred from the National Treasury by the President to this department. Because both the strategic plan, the annual performance plans get approved by Parliament. So that it's important to give that even more time. Then on the other aspect, really, it is a foretaste. We are, if then the honorable members are interested in a particular aspect, then they are really free to say, okay, come and talk to us more about this area. So ours really is to just almost curtain raiser of what is available. But of course, we are also ready to answer those questions that we can be able to answer. Thank you very much. Now, the purpose of the presentation, which in some cases, if with your permission, I'll run, scan through the slides, but you can bring us back to whatever area of interest, just to make sure that we don't spend too much time on the presentation. We'll broadly define the concepts that we use in our work of monitoring and evaluation in particular, and how it relates to the planning function. And also share the current approaches to monitoring and evaluation that we are implementing as a department. I'm saying DPME because it's not only us who do monitoring and evaluation in government. And also then draw possible uses of information for oversight purposes by this August House. We depart from the point of view, which is really an international best practice, that to monitor on the executive side means collecting, analyzing, and reporting data on a range of issues, inputs up to the impact of governments, programs, policies, and projects. And the key purpose being to ensure effective management. So monitoring and evaluation is about effective management, the performance of government. So by monitoring, we track that progress in implementation to inform, to measure what's happening so that we know exactly. There's a statement that is always usually said around this area of work that if you can't measure it, it's very likely that you can't manage it. So that's where then we need to have that data to tell us what's really happening. To inform accountability by the decision makers, like the honorable members, and also to promote learning. So learning on the management side is very critical, because we are likely, if we're not learning from our mistakes, we are likely to repeat them. So we also conduct that those assessments to know what's happening, where are the mistakes, how to correct them, and also enforce changes and corrective action. And most importantly, really, in support of the elected representatives, our ministers, and deputy minister and the president, to ensure service delivery. Now, the framework that I put on the wall there is really a short, standard approach of separating things. Firstly, we ask questions of what and how, which relate to input, which is what we use to do our work. Basically, the issues of budget, the issues of human resources, the issues of infrastructure that we put together in order to do our work. So that there is issues of accountability, for example, about how we spend our funds. Activities, it's what we do, the processes, the management practices, and the whole host of things that we do in order to achieve the service delivery, which is the output. So on the output side, it's mainly the focus about what can be paid for, the service or a product, basically. So we try to check, in terms of planning, what exactly are we going to deliver, is it being delivered? Then The most important part also within that, which basically cuts across, is who, the targeting that we do, who benefits out of that specific service that you do. So those are also important questions. And when in the previous administration, we were called upon to focus on the outcomes. People on the ground do not necessarily ask about the activities, whether I was in Cape Town or not. They ask about ultimately what have you achieved in terms of the quality of basic services, the quality of delivery to on the ground, issues of the effectiveness of the state itself. Then the impact, how, what change do we bring to the lives of the people? So those are the things that we measure on our daily basis using a range of tools, which I will quickly run through. Our starting point really in this time around is the plan, the planning side of things. We have a national development plan which has been adopted by the executive and approved by parliament. And that is our overarching plan on that side to that we are called upon to implement. So how are we implementing it? Our minister has recently launched a medium-term strategic framework, MTSF in short, which is summarized into 14 outcomes, which I will show shortly. And that's the five-year plan, first block of implementing the NTP. My colleague, Jeshri, will talk more on the planning side, so I won't dwell much on that. And then and the extent to which that national development plan through the MTSF gets implemented by the department. Now, this list of 14 outcomes is how then the cabinet has decided to implement the NTP, drawing on the priorities of government and what is contained in the NTP. It's translated into 14 chapters of the NTSF. So though the area of sports and recreation is cross-cutting, the most explicit outcome about this work is outcome 14 on the nation building and social cohesion side of things. What does the NTP say about sport and recreation? It is covered in the chapter on transforming society and uniting the country. I will quote just the part on the vision. The transformation vision for sports in 2030 is that participation in each sporting code begins to approximate the demographics of the country. Secondly, South Africa's sporting results are expected of a middle-income country with a population of about 50 million and historical excellence in a number of sporting codes. In short, the vision is having two pillars of the transformation side of things and the second part of ensuring excellence in sports as the middle-income country. And there is a range of activities that the NTP identifies. For example, for the vision to be realized, school sports must be adequately resourced. And there must be facilities. It's not just about expensive building, but in recreational environment, the basic facilities that would ensure community interaction. And the communities should organize those sporting events, league championships at a grassroots level. So that's the summary of what the NTP requires us to do in this area, just to show how we have translated. Again, and then on the MTSF side, which is the responsibility of the respective ministries, there is a chapter which is on nation building and social cohesion. It's having a range of actions drawing from the NTP itself, responsible ministries and departments. For example, in the slides that I'm showing, three ministries are already coming on board. Sports and recreation, of course, as an anchor. Basic education around issues of mass participation on sports events, including the social cohesion program. COCTA, for example, to lead on providing adequate sports and recreation facilities and ensure that those are maintained. That is at a municipal level. And the target there, for example, is that 20% increase in sport and recreation facilities built or maintained at a ward level by 2015-16. So that's really at the very basic grassroots level. and coinciding with the constituencies, I would imagine. And there are many more indicators. I'm not necessarily here to present the actual strategy, but just to highlight how it is packaged from the point of view of TPME. And now, how do we report this information? After cabinet approval, all the reports around these outcomes are published on a website which is called the POA, which stands for Program of Action website, www.poa.gov.za. So that information is contained in that website. You can see the MTSF delivery agreement and the reports across all those responsible. Now, the second program that I'm going to talk to is the monitoring of management practices in government. This links to the outcome 12, which is about the public service, an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service. One of the key criticisms of our work as the public service is it's inefficient, we don't really ready to implement the laws and the policies. So this kind of a program responds to that kind of a quest to improve implementation of government laws and policies. It focuses on the management practices like your poor resource management practices, financial management, issues of accountability, ethics, and so on. Now, the structure of this monitoring tool is such that it's having four levels. We take a policy, let me make an example like promotion of access to information. How is the department complying to that? Is it complying or not? So if it's not complying, it's a one. Level two, partial compliance with legal or regulatory requirements. So you might be complying somehow, but you're not fully complying, implementing that specific policy. Level three is full compliance, and then you are performing with the department, showing some results. Then level four, it's really given to departments that are showing they are working smartly, they are really doing all their best, not to implement just the letter of the policy or an act, but even the spirit, what is intended to be achieved. This is really checking on the management practices, but departments must also be assessed against the outcomes that I've alluded to before, as well as the plans that they have adopted and that are approved by Parliament. Just to share a previous result that we published on this specific tool, the management performance assessment tool. If you can see now, if you look at those four colors, from red being worst to green being the best, the picture was like this 2 years ago. And as you can see, then it showed clearly that there is poor implementation of many of the policies. Of course, there are areas of excellence that are green that we build on. Of course, the latest results are showing great improvement already, because the purpose really is continuous improvement. So where there was just lack of compliance on the basic laws and policies. Now the second monitoring program on the management practices is focusing on municipalities. The first one, MPET, focuses on national and provincial departments, all of them. And this one focuses on all municipalities. I must say we're still piloting this with at least about 30 municipalities at this stage, focusing on those areas of that are more relevant to municipalities. For example, issues of delivering basic services are very critical at the municipal level. Community engagement and governance by both the political and the managerial sphere are very important at that level. Now, the third monitoring program is around frontline service delivery monitoring, which has sub-programs, three of them. I will start with the last one, which is the presidential hotline. When President assumed office, he actually realized that there is a big gap between government and the people. And he urged us to quickly establish a mechanism that will ensure that people can call the president directly and get answers on their grievances. There came then the presidential hotline. That hotline, it provides that grievance mechanism. We provide data for the sector, and we can disaggregate that information into about where certain things are coming, what are the most asked issues, and to provide regular reports to cabinet and the HODs that are relevant. So if, for example, issues of housing are coming strongly, we have to engage with that sector so that they can be improved, because that's our main objective. And the resolution rate is quite impressive. It's above 90% of all the cases that are reported. The second one is an unannounced visit. Now, this is done by officials ourselves in conjunction with the offices of the Premier and the sector departments concerned. Our focus really is to go on the ground to check if the frontline offices, for example, clinics, schools, service delivery, I mean, the grant offices, are really structured and performing well in such a way that the experience of the citizens when they approach government is good. So it is progressing well. This, again, we do also as a demonstration for other departments to implement themselves, especially those that have services that are interfacing with the public directly. And most importantly, after we have monitored, for example, we have monitored 536 facilities already, we go back to check what has happened and support that the management of that facility to improve. Basic things like cleanliness, treating people with dignity, those kinds of things. That's what we monitor. Then the emerging program within this space is what you call citizen-based monitoring. Now, cabinet instructed us again to not simply check if the experience of citizens is good, but let's allow the voice of the citizens as well to inform government's work. So that's where the citizen-based monitoring comes from, is to really provide mechanisms for citizens to engage with government and inform how the public service works. So that we are piloting across all provinces, focusing only on three sectors that are very keen on this: South African police, the Department of Social Development, the grant offices of SASA, and the Department of of Health, the clinic. So those, for example, now we have been publishing a whole host of information, using it to ensure improvements, including on the presidential hotline. There is a comprehensive report, for example, on our website with a video that captures the stories from people who have experienced the improvement that came as a result of the presidential hotline. Now, the last part that I will talk to is now the E, National Evaluation System. Again, there was nothing much that we did before around evaluation of government, but since the establishment of the department, we established a national evaluation system. And the key thing was that we should be focused, strategic, on a few evaluations of national importance. So the key question is really, is it worth for cabinet to hear about it? So we select those programs, and the cabinet then approves and tell us where it would like to know more about certain issues. So we focus on all programs and policies. They must be large, covering a big population. They must be covering a substantive budget, or things that are very important to the public. If it's in the public domain and it's critical and there are no straight answers about it, and there is no commission of investigation that is instituted to do it, evaluation becomes a very important tool to ask those deeper questions of why things are the way they are and how things are being done, and to inform accountability and performance. We have limited capacity to do evaluation, so as a department, there is a strong drive to build that capacity across government, working very closely with the offices of the Premier across all provinces. There is an evaluation repository which contains more than 100 evaluations that have been conducted. Again, that information, most of it, because it came through an audit, we found that it was just sitting on the table without being used. So we are trying to ensure that we can use that those reports. I won't dwell much on this, but this is the model which explains how evaluations are categorized. But the range is from really the design of the policies up to assessing impact. And this one we do mainly with the National Treasury about the cost benefit, the value for money kind of questions that link to the use of public resources to implement. The Development in Caicos is an annual publication that has themes that are of interest to the country, just to track what's happening on economy, employment, issues of poverty and inequality at a very high level. It's actually similar to what KSSA would produce. For example, this is an aggregate pocketbook that KSSA has, they release on every year. But of course, we see a number here, you can drill down to a whole lot of other detail that if you want a question about something, KSSA in ourselves can easily then produce that kind of a report that relates to these two publications. Information is drawn from not only from government but also from the public. Just an example of an indicator there that is very much relevant to issue of social cohesion. We have been tracking this indicator, which is about pride in being a South African. Are South Africans proud to be South African? And you can see over time what has happened. During the economic boom years, there was that high spirit. Of course, there are many other factors. Then suddenly there is a drop for whatever reason. But after the announcement that we are going to be hosting a World Cup, until we hosted it in 2010, you can see the rise in the mood. And that's confirmed also by personal experiences, how the whole country was really in good spirit about what was happening. And the key then is to sustain that kind of a mood even outside of those major sporting events. So that demonstrates the value of sport, that really we can see it as a very blunt tool which is low risk but of high impact, addressing some of the most important things that keep the nation going. So that's just one example. So to put all things together in summary, looking at that model, what are we doing around the inputs? We have the planning function, of course. We use these management practices across the whole of government to assess inputs, the use of funds and resources. Activities, management practices, on service delivery, the program of action system, and the OTT quarterly reporting track that. How we reach the public, the experience of service delivery, the presidential outline is a result for people to ask the president directly what's happening, or the presidency then will provide answers. Citizen-based monitoring, we establishing mechanisms to ensure that citizen voice is listened to by government officials and the government at large. Frontline service delivery, the issues of dignity on the treatment of the people. And in terms of the outcomes, really, what do we change, what do we achieve? These examples of development indicators, the outcome system, we're trying to assess that. And the impact, we also have a range of indicators that we produce, which we can always share in more detail when it's required. And the evaluation side is really targeted on those across the whole value chain, about how, for example, are we implementing a particular policy, or why is a certain policy leading to the results that are not intended? What's the impact? How can we attribute the impact of a certain specific program of government? So in conclusion, monitoring and evaluation practices focus on the whole value chain. It's not really only about site visits or about just checking if managers are efficient in doing their work. About the whole value chain, about the use of resources, up to how those policies that are prescribed by our political principles are making any difference to the people's lives. But it is key that managers do it themselves. Otherwise, if it's just about one department doing that, it's a big of a risk. So we encourage that all departments should be on the ground, should establish these systems to measure and be able to account to cabinet and account to parliament and request to do so about what they are doing, using the evidence that comes from that. All information is available from our website. We are also now piloting new programs, for example, operations management. President has launched the Operation Pakisa, which is drawn from a Malaysian experience where you put officials in one room to not go out for a week or two, to really try to bring about solutions to identify problems, during monitoring you can pick up that something is always red, meaning it's a flag, it's flagging an enduring problem. So that big fast result seeks to turn around those problematic areas. We also encourage that you not just use information, including information from us. It has to be looked across, I mean, using other information, for example, information that is experienced on the ground, information from other research institutions. There are all sorts of international databases that are the professors at universities. They provide a lot of information in this area. So we encourage that. Look at the information from all sides. Evaluation per se is a new instrument. We see it as highly, as a great potential to be used by Parliament, for example, to answer those areas that there are bigger problems. For example, it is something that the Parliament can do to say, Department, can you conduct an evaluation, put it in your national evaluation plan around this issue? We want you to know in depth about what's happening here, because we've heard about this maybe for a long time. We are also interacting in the, as part of the minister's intention for us to share as much information, interacting with the capacity building besides to present a more detailed set of information around this in our work. And of course, I must indicate that minister does always alert us to the fact that we must respect the independence of the parliament, and of course, we are only officials. And thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, for your attention. With your permission, my colleague can also quickly share on the system that is about planning of my departments and reporting, which usually then have to come, in fact, by law, have to come to Parliament. And what are we doing around that? Thank you.
Outcomes in government, and we're actually planning according to that.
14 outcomes are actually directly linked to the NDP and the deliverables in the NDP as well. Swiss government's 14 outcomes. Okay, in terms of sequence of the new planning system, basically in terms of long-term plan, we have the National Development Plan. It has overarching objectives, it has high-level trade-offs, and it also flags the way for critical steps on the path to 2030. Then we have five-year plans. This is basically the medium-term strategic framework and the delivery agreement. As I said before, it's the building block of the NDP. Also, priorities for the electoral cycle are actually reflected there, and it draws together key activities. Now, very important to note is that the MTSF is cascaded into the five-year plan of national and provincial departments. All national and provincial departments must submit a five-year strategic plan and a three-year annual performance plan. And these strategic plans and annual performance plans must be linked to the MTSF of government. And then at a departmental level, we have a one-year plan, which is called an operational plan, and it basically highlights the activities that the department will actually do for a particular financial year. In terms of planning, budgeting, and reporting cycle, basically at the top we have oversight, which is done by Parliament, the provincial legislature, the municipal council. Then we have policy development, which takes place mostly in the national sphere of government. This policy is cascaded into the strategic planning cycle. Now, the strategic planning cycle comprises of the five-year strategic plan, the three-year annual performance plan. And part of the cycle is actually to specify performance indicators. Now, as I said, the indicators are actually come directly from the medium-term strategic framework for both national and provincial departments. And then we have operational planning and budgeting, where we set targets and allocate resources. Now, we started a process a few years ago where we're actually beginning to cost our plans so that we know how much each of the deliverables in the plan will cost. And we started doing this because we want to actually push this focus of value for money. Are we getting value for money in government? Is the budget that's allocated to a particular province buying what it's supposed to buy as stated in the strategic plan of the ACC? Then we move on to implementation and in-year reporting. This takes the form of the IYM, which is the in-year monitoring system instituted by National Treasury, and the QPR, which is the quarterly performance reporting system. Now, the in-year monitoring system tracks expenditure on a monthly and quarterly basis, and the quarterly performance reports actually track service delivery. And we get these quarterly performance reports at DPME, and I'll show you some of the tables a little later. But in terms of getting the quarterly performance reports, we're able to see how a particular department is performing for a quarter. And where a department is not performing, then it serves as an early warning system to flag that there's something wrong with delivery in this particular department. To enhance the process, we're working closely with National Treasury, and we'll see whether a department is actually producing services in relation to the budget that is actually being given. So when a department has spent their budget and has not produced any services, or has not achieved any of the targets in the APP, then this serves as an early warning system that something's actually wrong in that department. And then finally, we have the annual report, which is the ultimate accountability document in government. And the annual report basically flags delivery against the indicators and targets that were set in the annual performance plan. And of course, the service delivery information in the annual report is actually audited. These are basically the planning concepts that you'll find in the planning documents of government. I just want to go down to the last tier, institutions, operational plans, individual performance agreements. What we've tried to do from DPME side is that we want the targets in the APP should be reflected in the performance agreements of senior managers in government, because we want to start holding people accountable for service delivery. So for example, in the education sector, if the APP says we'll provide scholar transport to 25,000 learners. Now that target of 25,000 must be reflected in the performance agreement for the senior manager responsible for the scholar transport program. So they're actually trying to align the planning and the performance agreements as well. In terms of documents of the planning, budgeting and reporting cycle, we basically have strategic plans. These are 5-year plans linked to the electoral cycle, but also directly linked to the medium-term strategic framework. We have annual performance plans. These are rolling plans linked to the strategic plan, linked to the MTSS, but more importantly, the annual performance plans are linked to the budget. Right? So if as I said, we want to start costing service delivery, and that is why we brought the budget into the annual performance plan. Then we have in-year reporting, which is monthly financial reports and quarterly performance reports. And then we have the end-year reporting and the long-term reporting. So these are the documents of the planning, budgeting, and reporting cycle. In terms of developing STs and APPs of content, we actually advocate both a bottom-up and a top-down approach to planning, where we say that every single department must take into consideration the medium-term strategic framework, the national plans and planning framework, the President's State of the Nation address, the program of action, the provincial growth and development strategy, and the Premier's State of the Province address, when they're developing a Strat 10 and an APP at a provincial level. That's top-down. And bottom-up, the department needs to take into account local government IDPs as well as information from district offices. And the reason why we're actually pushing local government IDPs and information from district offices is because sometimes we find that municipalities and provincial departments offer the same services to a particular group of people. So there's a duplication of services because they haven't been speaking to one another. And eventually that is wasteful expenditure. So we're actually encouraging the three spheres of government actually speak to one another and they actually do the planning. This is basically the theoretical structure of the strategic plans and APPs. This is a bit of information on the strategic plans. They're 5-year plans aligned to the broader government strategies. They should not change over time. A new plan can be tabled or an annex to the APP. Strategic plans do not dictate the need for long-term planning. And of course, we go into the components of the strategic plan. Similarly, APP aims to link the plan, budget, and performance of the institution. It presents program performance indicators and targets to achieve goals and objectives over the end of the year. Quarterly performance reports are basically in-year reporting on non-financial results. Presently, the DPME is actually collecting quarterly performance reports from all national departments and all provincial departments. In terms of what a quarterly performance reporting or quarterly performance report looks like, what we've done is we've pulled out one from the sports sector, and this is a provincial quarterly performance report. It's the latest report for the first quarter. We collected by province. Just to take you through it, if we look at this particular indicator, it says the number of talented athletes supported within a structured development program by the sports federation. So we see Eastern Cape. They said a first quarter plan output of 125. They more or less reached it. They achieved 120. The Free State said a first quarter plan output is the APP of 200. They did not give us any data, and we take that as non-delivery. So that for us as GPME serves as an early warning system that something may be wrong in this particular department. Gauteng set a first quarter target of 250. they've achieved 292, which means they've overshot their targets. Mpumalanga has achieved, Northern Cape has achieved, Northwest has set a first quarter target of 350, which means they said they're going to support 350 talented athletes. But at the end of the first quarter, they only supported 65. So we immediately know that there's something wrong there. It's the early warning system. But also what we do is we go into the financial numbers to see what expenditure for this particular sub-program is. So if we look at Northwest, for example, they overshot their expenditure and they underachieved on their delivery, it means something's wrong. They're not planning correctly or they're spending the money on the wrong thing. That's the analysis we do. Western Cape, they didn't give us a target for the first quarter, but they achieved 62 for the first quarter. We can't say anything conclusive about this because we don't have a first quarter target. So basically, this is what the performance data from provinces looks like. If we move on, another quick example on sports, and it's relevant for the first quarter of 2014-15, is the number of people actively participating in organized acts of recreation events. If we look at Eastern Cape, they set a target of 21,000. They only achieved 11,550. Karting is not planning and reporting on this. What does it say? Free State is not planning and reporting, as well as Western Cape. What does it say? Do they not value this particular process? Have they not budgeted for it? These are the questions we need to ask. Gauteng has overshot their target by 848. KwaZulu-Natal set a target of 5,000. For the first quarter, they achieved 3,000. Limpopo set a first quarter target of 4,000, but they only achieved 1,697. Mpumalanga set a target of 10,000, but they only achieved 12,301. Northern Cape set a target of 3,000, but they achieved 3,009. And if we look at Northwest, it's quite interesting. They set a first quarter plan target of 1,000, and they've achieved 10,144. So we need to ask ourselves, is planning done correctly in Northwest? Why did they set such a low target? Are they planning for compliance? Are they planning for the Auditor General? Do they want to get a clean audit? These are the questions we kind of ask when we interrogate the data. Okay, moving on to the next slide, linking plans with budgets. What we basically got is the planning documents, which is the strategic plan, annual performance plan, which are tabled in Parliament. And then the budget document, which is the estimates of national expenditure as well as the budget and program structure. Now what we've tried to do, both from a National Treasury perspective and a DPME perspective, is we really try very hard to bring planning, budgeting, and reporting together. Previously there was silo mentality and we tried to do away with that. So we've even started the process of performance dialogue with DPME, where we meet with the department together with National Treasury and we ask them what is the money buying. We also go further, we look at previous year's performance. And if a particular department hasn't performed previous years for a particular program, then they need to justify why they actually need funds. So this is basically linking plans with budget. Then, from DPME side, we've also began the process of publishing of performance information. So if you go onto the website of provincial treasuries on a quarterly basis, you'll get the performance information of the sports sector. So Gauteng provincial treasury will publish all the performance information including sports. Similarly, Eastern Cape, Limpopo, Western Cape, North Cape will have all the performance information on the website. So you can access it from the website. In terms of annual reports, they're basically the ultimate accountability document in government. And what the annual report basically does is it actually reports on what was planned in the annual performance plan. So at the beginning of the financial year, a department will table an annual performance plan with indicators and targets. And at the end of the financial year, the department will table the annual report, which reports on progress against those indicators and targets in the ACP. This is basically one of sport and recreation for 2012-13, where we have the performance indicator, the planned target, and the actual output. If we look, go to sub-program on club development, we see the national department, the number of clubs developed per year. The planned target for 2012-13 was 180. The actual output for 2012-13 was 6. Now this is a major under-delivery in terms of the planned target that was fixed. If we looked at the quarter performance report, it would have served as an early warning system that this particular sub-program won't actually deliver on the annual target. So that's the kind of interrogation that we do in terms of also analyzing the annual report. Okay, thank you very much.
Without this information, I'm very happy that even us as this smallest department to other people that were considered even in the MDP, sometimes we were thinking that was just non-existent for entity, as even some of us were thinking that even the budget that we're getting sometimes it makes that people they are thinking that sport is the but I can assure you we have come to a committee that some of what they have put on the picture they've started to craft the program, and it's one of those things that this committee is thinking that by getting this information will be sharpened our skills and our program of visiting, especially the rural areas. This performance, this transformation, this committee has been saying that we don't see transformation, especially in the rural areas. When you're talking about the municipalities, the IDPs, hey, we have just hit us on the head. Honorable members, Honorable Bergman, I've seen your hand. This is the time that we must interact with the presentation. Honorable Bergman, Honorable Abrahams, Honorable Manana, Honorable Musi, Honorable Morad, thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to find out, in terms of where a project is not performing, you know, there was an indication that they flagged it and it's put on the radar. Are there any sanctions? Or, you know, I also believe that where there's a negative, there must be a positive. So, like, where a municipality or region is performing, are there any rewards for that? And secondly, what are the safeguards in place? I've heard that if you know, to make an amendment or make an adjustment, you can do X, Y, and Z. But what happens if there's a change in the government or a change in the presidency and someone then decides, well, we're taking it in another direction? How secure is this plan in terms of entrenchment?
Honorable Abraham. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'll start from there. I'd like to know if the Western Cape is an island, why are they not having active participants participating? I'd like to think that everybody would do that.
you have responded to part of what I wanted to ask. And then also on the management performance, what POA do you have, for instance, if people are on level 1 and level 2, then what remedy is there for them to improve and develop their skills? Do you have any future planning? The frontline service, I was happy when you mentioned subs, because before you spoke, I actually thought subs was one of the ones I wanted to ask a question, although it's in sports. Then what do you do when you arrive unannounced and you find that it's not in order? What remedy do you offer? Because you find that, for instance, in my constituency, where it has happened, but there's no improvement, then what do you do? Because you just carry it on and on for many, many years. And how can the committee recommend to your department for unannounced visits, you know, not us oversighting, but on your side? The whole value chain, you mentioned that the departments monitor themselves, but we know that they don't do the monitoring and evaluation, and that's why some of these things don't work out. The tracking, on the non-service delivery, it's good to hear that there's early warning signs, but then we see all these things happening with non-delivery of services. So what makes it a non-delivery on the community side where you have seen the early signs that, hey, there's a problem, let's jump in there and see if we can help. Thank you.
On the poor financial management, I think on the president's address on the corner and even the provincial address on the open, they always talk about this the payments, the non-payments of the service providers, especially the SMME. Some of them, you find they are just surrendering service and stayed maybe more than a month not getting payment. And I'm happy. I'm sorry. I was supposed to say I welcome your presentation, because with every stakeholder that we had here, we are talking about the monitoring and evaluation, because it's a key issue to oversee all the programs in the province. And what has the Department of Planning and Monitoring and Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation know that the monitoring program is effective in the government? Yeah, I'm covered. Some of the things I'm covered.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to welcome the presentation. But my just one question is that all departments would in a way come up with a policy to try to address certain things. But through my observation, some of the policies are so malnourished that they do not, you know, achieve what they intend to achieve. I just want to check as to, in cases like that, what is to be done, what do we do? Because, you know that it has financial implications thereof. Thank you, sir.
My question is related to the correlation between targets and outputs insofar as budget allocations are done, and how that evaluation process then informs budget allocations from the Treasury, if it does so. And lastly, with the issue of performance agreements with DD, with Director General, and tracking those with the output, whether that process also takes into consideration the performance agreement that the President signs with individual members of Cabinet.
So far, these are questions. Let's have some answers. We'll take second round.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. We respond to the questions of the Honorable Members, and we are really humbled by your words of encouragement and gratitude that the presentation does to a higher degree that meets your expectations. And these are also very useful questions that definitely we will not be able to exhaust, but we will give an attempt to answer where we can. and we will be able to provide even further answers in writing if we are required to share more information on them. I will go through all of them as much as I can, and my colleague will also then target some and add where there are gaps. If a project is not performing, what are the sanctions? Firstly, I must indicate that the linkage between the system of individual performance agreements of officials and of performance of their departments or program is not something that is at this stage fully functional. We are working across these administrative center of government departments to strengthen that area, because as is in the main, you'd find then that as officials tend to focus on some other managerial issues and not linked to outputs, but as Desha said, there's a strong sense to link that, because in the Public Service Management Act and regulations, there is a process of managing officials who are not performing, a disciplinary process. Of course, it starts with the remedies of, for example, if you're on probation, not doing your job well, that probation is extended for a certain period, and within that period, you might be taken to training or counseling, but if you still fail, the department has a right even to fire you after exhausting those processes. That applies even to how then even more senior officials have to be handled. So there is a drive to then make sure that the system doesn't link only to issues of corruption, maladministration, but it also now begins to address issues of non-performance. Safeguards to the plans, the medium term and the long term plan, and NDP and NTSF. Firstly, the National Development Plan is produced through that National Planning Commission, which is only having two politicians, the Deputy President this time, and Minister Jeff Hardin. Then the rest of the commissioners are independent, intellectuals and people representing different voices in the society, who advise cabinet on the National Development Plan. So we're told that's the first safeguard to make sure that it can be able to capture as many voices, different voices, and diversity of views from society through those participatory processes and the ways in which then it was developed. And of course, also informed by a very strong major diagnostic to generate evidence to tell us where we are and what are the key issues. Now, after that plan was developed, it wasn't just approved by cabinet, it was presented to parliament itself as the guardian of the public. So that endorsement was seen as a safeguard in the first instance. But of course, what the president has said, and our minister, is that that's not a Bible, it's not a closed book. It can be revised, but it shouldn't be a willy-nilly process to do so. So that is a safeguard to ensure that we have now as a plan that is long-term and is up to the 2030. Now, the critical point now is implementation. The new medium-term strategic framework, which is significantly different from the other ones that we've done before, is really a concrete document that seeks to say what are the specific things that a particular political administration, 5-year term, is going to do to implement that national development plan. So that now has been released by the end of July into the public domain. All the chapters are in our website, and we can always give even hard copies of that, which is then going to be used to hold accountable a particular administration about how it's going to implement the plan. So that is then presented as a safeguard as well to make sure that there is clarity. And as my colleague has alluded to, then the cascading and alignment to the departments themselves,
begin to say what exactly are they doing to ensure implementation. So there are systems of institutionalizing planning and institutionalizing monitoring, evaluation, and implementation of the plan. And those are seen as potentially then existing perpetually beyond any specific administration. But respecting even the democratic processes as well. For example, it is clear that in the national in the development of the medium-term strategy framework, we get to incorporate the electoral mandate of the political administration of the time, which then happens even at provincial level and at municipalities. So there is that flexibility, whilst also agreeing like that this has to be kept within a certain limit. What remedy to improve the skills of the departments at the departmental level, skills development, the new national school of government is actually the custodian of the planning function for government officials. So we have 8 courses on MME only, different elements to train public officials about how to conduct MME and other courses around planning, for example, budgeting, risk management. So that we work closely with them to make sure that happens. Subsidize training where we know it's needed, the response to departments that might require support from us, build that capacity. The unannounced visit, yes, we can be able, we will appreciate if we are called upon and invited to go to specific areas. We do have a program that is in place that we can openly share, which if then it's missing certain sites that are of interest to Parliament, I'm sure that it would be easy to really add and divert resources and bring feedback about what has happened. Now, visiting with and seeing the early warning but no remedy. We championing this program of frontline service delivery to say to departments, you don't only visit, but do make sure then that you follow up to check what has happened after visit. But most importantly, work with that institute or institution to make improvements. You leave an improvement plan that's agreed upon by the management of the facility and then take it forward. Of course, some of the problems that we pick up in these site visits are more systemic. Hence, we go back to engage. For example, staff management is one of the most enthusiastic when they are engaged about what's happening on the ground. So systematically, you are picking up, for example, that managers on the ground are struggling with the facility, the rent, for example. It is beyond the manager of a clinic to pay rent when the lease is maybe responsible of, say, another department, say, public works or municipality. So those things then you pick up that, oh, it's a systemic problem, lack of maintenance, then you establish a stronger program to really make those improvements. Doing what departments do, M&E themselves, of course, we do acknowledge, we've done even assessments to check the extent to which they are doing the monitoring themselves. And for example, the tool that I demonstrated on the right, it's one area that was weak, but we're beginning to see a significant improvement, especially around this tool of annual performance plan and the quarterly reporting that happens around that. Of course, quality is very variable, and that we also acknowledge. But we're really trying hard to make sure that there is a great improvement in this regard. The third honorable member asked about poor financial management and non-payment of service provider. It's really something that it might appear very small, but you are correct, honorable member. Companies go under, and families suffer just by not paying the invoice, then they end up not really improving the service. So we have championed this. And beyond the program that I've shown you, President, sometime in 2010,
called the entire management, top management, all the directors general, and asked them about those specific questions. And this is one of those questions that he asked. And there is an additional monitoring that we are doing around that, where we're checking which departments are slow in paying providers on time. And we're tracking that in a very comprehensive way across the whole state to make sure that there is improvement. Working with Treasury, and part of the new function of the National Treasury on the Chief Procurement Officer is exactly the systemic response to some of those challenges around supply chain, including maladministration that are players in that area. So that is being attended to in that session. What TPME knows about the effectiveness of programs, in the main, this is really the trust of our work, but of course the whole value chain about how people work. But the effectiveness is something that we really would do, especially around the priorities of government. Hence, we don't end at the level of the medium-term strategic framework. We also have a detailed delivery agreement which specifies which department should do what, by when, and we make sure there is reporting that happens on a regular basis. And there are forums of the cabinet, like we call implementation forums, where this effectiveness question is debated and solutions are proposed. And the big fact results program, which is Operation Pakistan in short, seeks then to take that forward to say, after that has been identified, the problem has been identified of lack of effectiveness, we go out and make sure then there is a turnaround that happens, a strong intervention to bring about solutions. The fourth honorable member asked about, acknowledge the fact that departments do have policies, but some are malnourished, right? Technology. And then that's actually the kind of question that evaluation we encourage that they should ask. Because that's the question that they're asking, honorable members, is like, so what? Then you've developed this policy, we don't see any product. That's where then we really say there needs to be a review of that policy. And if it needs to go through a more design kind of evaluation to make sure that it's really achieving the target and the impact that it's supposed to, it must be changed. One of the things that we're picking up on the impact, the management practices kind of scorecard, is that actually some of the reds are showing us that our policies are not necessarily not implemented well, but there is poor design in how as government we are implementing them. So we go back and engage those departments. So DPSA, issue of service delivery improvement is really clearly not making it. How do we make sure that that is improved? Treasury, the supply chain management system requires so many steps for an average official to complete procurement. How do we make it to be leaner and smarter? And then we improve on that. So there is a range of interventions that we take forward as part of the improvement plan. We also write case studies of good practices to ensure that departments, for example, a new department like the Department of for Women can go and learn in other departments that have implemented this for years and have actually become good practices. So they write case studies and they can look at that and they can invite us to sit with them to work through that framework to improve it. So that's the range of activities that we do. And the last question from Honorable Member was about the correlation between targets and budget. And I would really like to leave that to my colleague, but then take the last question about correlation between the DG performance agreements and those of the ministers. Correctly, part of our system of performance monitoring and evaluation is to have performance agreements for ministers, which are signed with the president. So the first cycle of performance agreements has reached its end now. So on the basis of the MTMF, the new medium-term plan, we are busy working with the departments to draft those performance agreements. But I must allude to the fact that the ones of the ministers and president are not necessarily contracts. They are just a management tool. The president has his own
political prerogative to manage his ministers. But there are agreed upon tools to specify what exactly will be done by that ministry in a particular period of time. So that is purely between the minister, the president and the ministers. But then the second step of your question of correlation, what we do then, after having this MTFF and alignment to the departmental plan, we take both of those plans to make sure that they are aligned to DG's performance agreement. And that's one of the systems that's being improved now in terms of the National Development Plan to enhance that capacity. And for example, we know of the debate around the head of public service maybe being a DG in the presidency, those kinds of things, to make sure that that system then is fully aligned to make sure then the performance of DGs correlates with the performance of their department in a very direct way. But work is underway, for example, around MPET to make sure that the DGs incorporate those areas, improvement plans around MPET. So there is a big drive to ensure that those systems work. If you could kindly take...
Thank you, honourable members, for the questions. I think Stanley has actually answered most of them, with the exception of three. In terms of the changing of plans, yes, the honourable member is correct. Strategic plans and APPs are not cast in stone. So if we table a strategic plan and we find that the department is taking an entirely new policy direction, or there's a change in something significant, then the department can revise the strategic plan. So it doesn't have to stay stagnant for the 5 years. In terms of the next question, the correlation between targets and budgeting. Yes, National Treasury is actually driving a process of performance budgeting, and they're doing it together with the DPME, where, as I said, we're actually beginning to cost the outputs in the APP. And as I said in the beginning, each department has an operational plan. Now, this operational plan must be a costed operational plan. So in terms of actually costing targets and budgets, we're actually doing the costing per program, as is stated in the framework of strategic and annual performance plan. And then we cascade that costing to an operational plan level where all the activities must be costed as well. In terms of Western Cape being an island and they're not reporting on the customized indicators, in terms of the indicators that are actually showcased in my presentation, we call them customized indicators. So they've been developed by the sector for the sector. And by virtue of that, Western Cape must actually report on these indicators because they were part of this customization process. So from our side as DPME, when we find any province over and above Western Cape not reporting on these indicators, we actually channel our concerns with both the Office of the Premier and the Provincial Treasury. And the reason why we channel the concerns with the provincial strategy is because they are funding these indicators. These indicators are core to a department. They're funding it, and then from a provincial level, provincial strategy normally takes up the matter with the respective department. Okay, I think that's about all the questions that were asked.
Thank you, honorable officials. We are planning for Eastlake Plain. There's a researcher, the honorable staff of this committee, who wanted to ask some questions related to the work that they will be doing for us as members.
My inquiry is more of a practical experience, which the committee is observed for a significant amount of time in the past 4 years. I think this goes directly to Ms. Modley, especially in the Eastern Cape and other provinces whereby there were supported athletes. For us, the challenge is those supported athletes do not always reflect when we do our own impact assessment and the policy imperative levels. For instance, if you take the number of athletes that we assisted and check how many have risen through the ceiling at national colors level, be it a junior's level, but at the national colors level, to assist us on transformation, which is a policy imperative and something that is the core center of the social cohesion, we don't find solace on that as members. We're always not happy, especially at the demographic level. Now, the impact of those numbers for us at times, we do feel it's only at a paper, it's in the presentation, it's in the PowerPoint, it ends there. Because when we do our oversight, there's a disjunction, there's no correlation. Secondly, the issue of school sport, which Mr. Ntakumba has raised as well. If you look at these trained athletes, again, juxtapose that with the trained coaches to sustain the proposition of the school sport, again, we are not happy. It's a policy issue, however, we don't know where, who funds the function, where does the function lie. As a committee, we're still battling with that, with the Department of Education. Now, MNE should assist us to say, who funds what? Because when you train these people, especially these coaches and other relevant stakeholders, we ultimately have to measure, engage their contributions. But again, I think for me, this all boils on the issue of the accuracy of information provided at times. Especially around issues of performance activities, output or outcome and so forth, vis-a-vis activities, as well as the expenditure trend, which is your financial performance. It's a problem for this community. A case in point, let me take mass participation. Mr. Ndagumba raised an issue of mass participation as an indicator in the first slide, the second slide. In 2010-2011, mass participation was given 483 million. Right? On the issue of expenditure trends and financial performance. It was given 483 million. Versus what purpose? To participate. Versus what? To get what ultimately? The investment of that money. While we're struggling to replace certain players in our national, we don't have our own Makayan team here. While they're investments, we don't have our Brighton Pulses in Benny McCarthy. While they're investments, now, if mass participation is a measure or is an indicator, according to Mr. Ndakumba, how do we then, as a committee, gauge and say, MNE is applicable in this? How do we evaluate this thing? Well, this brings me to a question of the legal mechanism or regulatory framework mechanisms that are in place. For instance, your PFMA. The PFMA, to some extent, it's together with the breaker. Those are sleeping lions. Yes, they are lions, but they are sleeping lions. Because I say the same bureaucrats, the same officials can easily tame those two special regulations and those acts. If that was not the case, we wouldn't have what it queries according to Auditor General. But time and again, we'll always have an audit query. Time and again, we'll always have an audit query. Now, I think MNU should talk to even specific legislation such as the PFMA to say how do we critically evaluate the act itself so that it cannot be easily tamed by this official. But at a more practical level, when I'm summing it up, the LGMIM, the context of local intergovernmental relations, the practical experience from this committee is that when people are submitting their IDPs, the frontline service, when people are submitting their IDPs, you find that support is there, it's even catered in the budget for it. But when you go and conduct oversight, the very same money is used for something else, sanitation or whatever. Now, what does MNE suggest to us today? Thanks.
On the other hand, upset will take several rounds. I didn't see it. Oh, I'm very sorry, Honorable Mutel. I didn't see your hand because you were supposed to serve with members. I didn't see your hand. I'm very sorry.
Mine is just one question. It was answered, but I'm partly not satisfied. The issue of target setting and actions. See, if provinces can put any number for the sake of them to look good at the end, if you want to do justice to the improvement of sports in the country, like others, Western Cape, for example, they are not practicing this thing. Free State, they do, they don't. Others, they just put one, and then it's business as usual. It's fine. It can't be. I think somebody independent should be responsible for setting targets. Not myself setting my own target. That I know. If I'm lazy, I'll just put zero point something. And at the end of the year, I'll achieve it. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm suspecting that with that one, Honorable Abraham's tried to forward that question, and then realized, I didn't hear you. What do you do about these provinces that are doing that? And I don't know your role, whether it's to have a follow-up on what it is not done when you found it, and I don't know what's your role, or you expect that is our role, that when you give us information, you must act on that, or else now you still have a role to play. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Let me start with the first question. Clearly, the colleague is very much in touch with the detail about this site, and I think that's very, very encouraging. And the detail about the performance of the sector itself is not something that we are ready to provide direct answers to. As you said, but I think your question was really, see all of these targets being set, see actually some activities happening about training, so how do we evaluate that things are happening? Of course, correctly, some of these questions are very simple questions that you ask, like on the right people, why is things the way they are? Then when you need to actually get more deeper answers, it's when a research or an evaluation can be commissioned via a range of actually state machinery, not just us. We can also be asked to do that kind of work. But we really encourage that the national department or the provincial department do it themselves and submit to the relevant authorities about a more comprehensive evaluation of why things are the way they are, why things have not been changing. Even sometimes where there is great performance, what can we learn? Why is a certain province or certain specific ward doing so well? What can we learn and translate to others? So that's something that potentially can be done. So in short, I wouldn't be able to delve on the specifics
of, for example, why, for example, certain provinces are struggling versus the others. So our role was to demonstrate the tools and the instruments that are there. But then, of course, from DPME, we do have an outcome facilitator that deals with this sector, which can actually come with the department concerned to address the very much details that you raised. That is something that's possible. From the DU, we have a deputy director general level employee who works exclusively on this specific issue. So then the second, that leads me to the second question by the honorable member. At this stage, as I'm saying, you are the forecast of the broad picture of what's available, the menu, really. But then if in the menu you want to get something, that's something that we are happy to drill down and talk to in a detailed way.
I've listened when you were tabled with what you were saying, that you can answer some and others not. So maybe you were thinking that you didn't take all your crew to come here. We appreciate about the honest information. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Now on the questions that
given.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The two questions that the Honorable Manda asked, the issue of target setting versus actuals. That work of the outcome facilitator and my colleague Deshi is to make sure what is specified in the policy, in the NDP and the medium-term strategic framework is properly targeted in the strategic plan and NDP. So it is our job indeed to check that officials are not gaming the system, setting low targets so that they can shine, or setting unreasonable targets which are unreachable and can actually maybe dampen the spirit. So that is something that we do, and we do follow up to check those APPs. And the role of Parliament, because all of these then get tabled to legislatures by the provinces and to Parliament by the national department. Then, of course, Parliament has its own right when it's tabled to say, no, this just doesn't make sense, or it's changed. Then they are allowed to revise on the basis of oversight by Parliament. And the questions that you're asking are part of that role of checking versus the expenditure versus the achievement of targets. If you have gained the system by putting a target, say, in the IGP and you spend on something else, it is the role of the municipal council to make sure that doesn't happen. They can account on the basis of why is that not done. And the use of other information, by the way, when we are permitted to come to Parliament, we have invited other center of government institutions and the key chapter 9, Auditor General, Public Service Commission, Department of Public Service and Administration, State SA, to come as well with us, so that then we can provide all the answers. And for example, the performance management system is run by the DPSA. They can even give more detail around that. The Auditor General, their experience of always maybe picking up problems and they are not addressed. Because our role then is to facilitate that those problems are also sorted out. Now the follow up, we do it ourselves through ensuring that there is performance improvement and try to enforce some kind of accountability where possible, but of course we are very limited. We do not necessarily have depth in terms of say ensuring consequences. That's the role of the oversight chapter 9, as well as of course the legislatures and the Parliament itself to enforce that level of accountability. So really ours is really stronger on the level of ensuring that there is continuous improvement, learning, and of course where possible then officials are brought to account, but that
I must say we have identified it as a bit of a gap in terms of how we perform our work. And of course, some of the limitations, we're not making excuses, we are trying to fix them, like the intergovernmental relations. A DG of a national department cannot go to a province and punish an official by law. So irrespective of that, for example, affecting the whole sector. So those are the things that a government is trying to fix by making sure that there are business processes that are able to help us improve performance of the state. So I don't know if I've answered all questions, but definitely my colleague didn't answer else adequately. Thank you.
If I may just add to the concern that with regard to supporting athletes that do not reflect at national colors level, from the new cycle which starts next year, previously we've always been number crunching. Number of the number of learners supported, number of clubs supported, etc. But from GPMA, we're actually also pushing this notion of quality services. Instead of number crunching, we need to start focusing on the quality of services we offer. So if we talk to the one you raised in particular about the number of learners supported, now from GPMA, we want to know upfront from a particular department what kind of support will you offer? Because support could be giving a learner a t-shirt, or it could mean taking them to a sports club, giving them a sports bursary, etc., etc. So we want to know about the quality of support that's being offered. Also in terms of other sectors, we're moving towards the notion of quality service delivery. This is a lame example. In human settlements, they have this indicating number of houses built. We're not interested in the number of houses built only, but we're also interested in the quality of houses that's built. So it's this move towards quality service delivery that we're actually pushing from DPME. In terms of target setting and actuals, Sally answered it quite well. But also, I think the role of legislatures and parliament cannot be overemphasized, because these plans actually come to you and you can interrogate it, as Stanley said, and provide feedback. You can even say you don't agree with them. If you look at the previous year's baseline or the annual report data and say revise or what informs them. So I see legislatures and parliament actually have a very good big role to play in the target setting as well. One more thing, in terms of what we're doing at GPMA, we've started this process of performance dialogue, as I mentioned before. So it's an initiative between National Treasury and GPMA where we call departments to actually account in a way for how they're spending their money, but in relation to how they're spending their money, we also want to see what services they've bought with the money. And in relation to what services they've bought with the money, we're moving towards the quality of services, which will ultimately result in the outcomes that we want to achieve in the next 5 years. So there's something new that we've actually started from this year.
Thank you so much. I'm here Mr. Ntakumba saying that you don't have this. I want to pose this question. What do we do as a committee if one DG or some DGs justify the understanding on the basis of not wanting to harm treasury regulation? Of the at the expense of the real development.
I hope I understood you correctly, Honorable Chair, but in terms of the way we structure the guidelines, both the budget and the planning, when there's under expenditure, we would expect some kind of not achieving of targets in the ACP.
maybe the department was really efficient and they were able to achieve the targets. But even if they were able to achieve the targets, the under expenditure will not be so much. The other thing what we find, and I actually suggest we can also look at it as a committee, is these tables that are showed with regard to the under delivery and the indicators. Where does under delivery indicators there should be under expenditure? Because it means the department did not buy what they're supposed to buy. They did not deliver the services that they were supposed to deliver. So if there's under delivery on services in terms of the table I showed, and there's over expenditure, it means that the department is spending the money on the wrong thing. They're not spending the money on the core service delivery mandate of the department. And we can pick that up quarterly through looking at the IYM data, as well as the quarterly performance reporting data.
We'll tackle the last person in order that we must close before 1 o'clock.
Well, sir, I would like to share the tone of this committee to our officials that we are not happy with things like on page 10 there is this thing like in the book, the plan was 450, no actuals, and on the next column again 200, no actuals, all these things. This thing is telling you what our research was talking about. Because the money is allocated, but it's used for something else. And I'm telling you, our people will start demanding to know where did the money go. It's going to happen. It is happening now in the Cox Brothers. I'm telling you on the news that people are there in the municipality. They want to know where is their money. So it's going to happen countrywide, even on the to the ground, because people are not accounting. So I'm saying officials must do their work. The committee will do its work, but the public also is already doing the work outside. Thanks.
The only thing that I can tell you, the information that you have come with is in all our hands. And the role of this committee is to do the oversight. So, in some instances, no one can do the oversight out of your presentation. That's the role of the committee. Honorable Mutek, you know that it's high in our agenda to go and visit and do the oversight. We've said in the first day of this committee, we've seen that in the infrastructure, that 15% which is taken to the municipalities, we want to go and check what are they doing. So what today we've got is some of our ammunition. When we're going there, we must not say that what are you doing? What will be coping these debts that you are giving us? That upon the reporting of such a day, we've discovered this. So the people, if they want their money, they must want their money on a context of information, not just get to the street saying that we want money, we must go and be part of themselves, saying that this monitoring committee did come to us and they did tell us ABC, that's where we're supposed to start to do our oversight. So this is the right committee to do oversight, and by calling you, we wanted to hear from you, what are you gathering in all provinces, in order that when we're doing our strategic plan, we must have information, not just looking at the people destroying our structures that are already there, because they are saying that they want their money. They must know what are they wanting, not to destroy. We do appreciate that people must say that we want ABC to your government, not to destroy those who already there, the infrastructure. So I'm taking that this is a good committee that we are arming, that when we are going to these areas, your Limpopo, your Western Cape, your Free State, they can't just have blank information whilst you are doing your work. We'll assist you. Together we can do more. Thank you. Honourable members, I'm taking that this committee is always interrogating the information, and we are always happy to have people with information and figures, and then from there, the week that we are going to have our strategy, it's going to be a richer one, because we have about 72 entities. We're still that far, but with those who did come, you have heard us when we're debating the question of image fixing, that we want to get information before even we act. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be with you. Your information is going to our Bible. Thank you so much. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Those, you must not forget our first announcement. Those who want to go tomorrow, I even see that my meeting is starting at 12:30. That I was thinking that is 2:00, but I'm suspecting 10, 11, 12 will be finished. We can't take the whole day in a visit. They must come to this honourable lady next to me. Thank you.